This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Guardians, a winner on opening day. Audio courtesy of the Cleveland Guardians and Major League Baseball.
Guardians TV.
Did you guys enjoy that yesterday? Was it the little gym with the little one getting the texts? Like,
you weren't the only one.
We are struggling. We can't find it. It is blacked out. Are we getting baseball? But you know what? In the end, it seemed like everybody eventually got it, and the Guardians were victorious on Kyle Manzardo's humongous opening day in Kansas City, and your Gardos 1-0. Daryl Ryder in for Kent Garman today. We've got Mitch. We've got Owen. We've got Zach Jackson of The Athletic at 8 o'clock, who's been basically at all the pro days. Joel Corey, CBS Sports at 9, to tell us the salary cap is, once again, a myth in the NFL. And maybe an interesting development going on behind the scenes when it comes to who could be the next Browns quarterback. But Daryl, welcome into the show. Do you have any problem catching up with your favorite baseball team last night?
It was a little slow getting started, but about the third inning or so, was able to lock in.
All right, so what was the issue? And were you encountering the same issue that everybody else seemed to be?
Well, the what I got to do now, this is the frustrating part, is I have to use the browser. I have to use a browser on my TV because I kept looking for like an app.
Oh, I'll teach you about that later.
And I couldn't found the app. I couldn't find an app, so I finally just, it was like, all right, I'm gonna do the browser thing on the TV. Not the funnest thing to try and do with a remote that doesn't have any letters or numbers that you can type in on it. You're getting carpal tunnel working the arrows, yes, trying to find your...
Well, Guardians is a very long word.
Yeah.
If they were the Reds, it would have been much easier.
Well, it's CleGuardiansTV, I think, .com, yes, is the website. So that's an adjustment for me. But, you know, I do like the fact that unlike years past, it's readily available to stream now. Because I'm a streamer. I don't have cable of any kind. I stream everything. I rotate my streaming services every couple of months so I can catch up on content and stuff like that. But I ended up watching the end with Joe Vardon in the media room down at Rocket Arena. I ended up watching the 9th and 10th innings. And I'm actually proud of myself. I stepped away from X from a moment after Emmanuel Clase blew the save in the 9th.
Probably a good time to do it, right?
Well, I had it ready to go. Emmanuel Clase picking up right where he left off in the playoffs. It was ready to go. And then I was like, you know what? I'm already getting enough grief over something else. Probably not the time to be piling on. So I hit the delete key. And, you know, the Guardians ended up with the 3-run 10th inning and winning the ballgame. So all's well that ends well.
Yeah, it was awesome. I think it's, unfortunately, is this a glimpse into how all of this stuff is going to be down the road?
Like, yes.
Could you see yourself having to try to find out whether your team is even going to be available? Where are they going to be available? How are you going to access it? Obviously, you are an increasing portion of the demographics probably right now that are in all around the country that are trying to, you know, figure out, do we cut cable? Do we not? I have to say, I mean, like, you know, 10 years ago, it's an old champion's pose. This is an old one. We had a lot of people saying, Lima, we're stealing. We are streaming. We know the websites. We're getting everything for free. I got rid of cable. And, you know, all these years later, Wouldn't you just like to go back to the old cable model?
Yes.
Wouldn't, this is wouldn't you prefer? Yes. I feel like this is my best take that I've had. And I called it out 10 years ago. I'm like, yeah, but it's all in one place. Yeah, but I'm saving money. I'm saving money. Who today is that thrilled with the state of affairs for the way that they have their viewing habits shaped with all these streaming controversies?
Here's the problem that streaming has is that it's very difficult to change channels. It's not like you type in the number in your remote.
Yeah,
and
sucks.
It's immediate. You got it logs you out of your one app or one streaming service to go into another. And this is something that the NFL has to watch out for, because I feel like that's where that league might be going. And fans are already a little frustrated because they do games now on Peacock and Netflix and Amazon Prime. And if you get into a multi-game situation, right, where the current TV package, Fox and CBS, and then NBC at night, well, that's fairly easy to maneuver. But, like, if I want to, like, change games in the 1 o'clock window or the 4 o'clock window, and I end up having to change that, that's going to be one annoying pain in the backside. Now, March Madness was fun for me. I had the multi-view up.
Oh, there you go.
So I could watch 3 and 4 games at a time. That was pretty cool. Streaming-wise, but yeah, the streaming is great, but I think that they've got to find some way to come up with some sort of portal so it's like you're changing channels on cable instead of having to...
Well, ironically, that's kind of where we're heading, is the bundling up of streaming services, so it's going to be cable all over again, only, I got to say, with a worse interaction... A worse portal, a worse way for any viewers to actually access all
the way. The way Daryl's doing it, though, where you go cut one every couple months and, you know, you save 10, 20 bucks.
Well, here's the thing. I sat down and I did my credit card bill a couple of months ago because I'm like, wait a minute, how am I spending this much money? I don't remember going, and I sit down and I'm like looking at all, you know, all my subscriptions that I have, and I'm like, all right, gotta, you know, rein this in a little bit. And so I do rotate every 3 months. I'll rotate my my streaming services. $20 per streaming service, that really adds up in a hurry.
Does. So once finally you were able to get settled in and watch some Guardians baseball, was it business as usual? Did it feel like normal?
Yeah, it felt like a normal broadcast.
You still had our buddies, Matt Underwood. You had Rick Manning. Dre doing the interviews.
Yeah, Rick Manning's like, wishing happy birthday to, some fine young woman in the middle of nowhere, Ohio. Other than it just being in a... It didn't have a network branding per se on it, you know?
Aesthetically, it was cleaner.
Yeah, it felt like a normal sports television broadcast. Like Owen said, I do feel like from like a... I know we're really like getting deep in the sauce here, but from like a graphics perspective, the presentation, it was, you know, sharper and cleaner, and I don't know how to describe it, but just from a visual standpoint.
Well, why was I so tense and nervous that I didn't get to watch the first two innings of baseball, though?
What do you mean?
I just felt like I was resetting. Well, I tried to get in on the pregame, and I couldn't even get the pregame show to stream. And just resetting the app and going on my phone, going on my TV, going back and forth because I couldn't see the game. And ultimately, it didn't cost me, you know.
But you probably assumed.
I missed a bases loaded situation.
Sure. You probably assumed you were going to be left in the dark, right, for the entirety of the game. That stinks. Like, you're one of those that gets really excited about opening day. You were, you know, of everybody yesterday, you seemed to be the most excited about it. So you carve out that time. You get yourself pumped up. Watching baseball for that first time, it always feels like we're entering a new season.
I got to watch the most important part of the game on a laptop. It's fantastic.
I got to see Manzardo hit for the tricycle.
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it was a great way to start. Things got hairy in the eighth. Gattis worked himself into a dicey predicament. Fortunately, he had some boneheaded base running by the Royals. That was always fun. And heads up with Jose and Naylor, and they were able to get themselves out of that situation. Then in the ninth, Class A. What your thoughts, Daryl? Is there reason to be concerned? It is funny, though. There were people legitimately, like, they obviously remember how things ended last year, and their dominant closer all of a sudden looked to be a weakness at a really bad time. And then he comes out and, you know, he was throwing strikes for the most part.
The movement wasn't there on the pitches, though. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're used to seeing some movement with the Heat, and just kind of felt like he was just throwing straight lasers.
Yeah, it's and it is early, but you know how with relievers, how they could fall off a cliff so fast.
Hey, listen, you're talking to a guy who came in ready to start the Kyle Manzardo for American League MVP campaign this morning.
You might as well put Class A in for Cy Young because he's 1-0.
He is 1-0. Yeah, if you're a fantasy, if you're a rotisserie guy, Daryl, I know that you used to be. Does anybody win out by him, you know, blowing the opportunity, but then getting the win?
This guy could have 30 or 40 wins this year.
Hey, well,
he's
going to
have the most opportunities.
So, hey, a little tight, 240, even though there's extra innings, 2 hours, 40 minutes.
You know,
yesterday, you got your win.
He got the short end of the stick last year in the Cy Young voting. He figured, hey, it's not saves that I need. I need wins.
Yeah.
It's all about wins.
So, racking them up, what did you make of the controversy in the news before the game? We're sitting here pumping up Tanner Bibee all game long. Next thing you know, the bevy of tweets. Everybody got it. Because I don't typically get to social media as much during the day like I used to. And I logged on, and it was 100 straight tweets about him being out with, what, food poisoning?
I guess. So he actually, and I, it is a Bibee is his handle on X. And I got a chuckle out of him going on X to tell people to stop talking about a certain fast food chain that he enjoys visiting on a daily basis. He had posted that he was sick before he could even think about a bowl. He wanted to clarify that whatever illness he obtained, it was not a result of his regular selection in fast food.
Yeah. Well, that had to be really interesting for Lively, knowing that, you know, you're settling in. It's opening day. Who knows what he was doing the night before?
Right.
When, you know, pitchers don't think they're going to play, don't think they're going to pitch. Sometimes they have a very different routine, which could involve who knows what the night before the game. Instead, he gets the call. What'd you think of his performance overall?
Yeah.
He ends up striking out three earned runs in his five innings of work, giving up four hits.
Yeah, I thought it was a quality start, especially considering the situation.
Game of chance.
That's really all you can ask for. And I think you're starting to see, Anthony, and again, I realize we're getting a little deep in the weeds here after one game, but you're starting to see throughout Major League Baseball a lot of five-inning starts. Like, if you can get into the sixth and seventh and eighth innings, that's no longer done with regularity. It's become, got into the sixth or seventh inning now. You're seeing, and a lot of it has to do, I think, with the specialized bullpen setups and the Guardians, previously known as the Indians. Like, they started with Terry Francona, started that trend of building that bullpen for innings six through nine, just get the starter through five. So, yeah, I thought, considering the situation, I thought he was pretty good.
All right, Guardians get the win. 7-4, 1-0. Daryl, what does that mean for the season? What does that mean for 162?
162. Do we start? What are we chanting this morning?
That Daryl's ready to chant.
Do we do the 162-0? Or do we do MVP? I'm a little.
Daryl, whatever you choose, we will follow.
Do we do Cy Young for Emmanuel Class A being 1-0? Like, I'm torn.
Listen, it's a generous show.
Ways.
If you start a chant, especially at the end of the show and coming in hot, which right now is on the fence. We'll see how today goes. Got to earn coming in hot. We do a lot of chanting, a lot of hooting, and subsequently a lot of hollering on coming in hot.
We do love both hooting.
We do love both.
If the concerts go to Brook Park, one, they're not all going to go to Brook Park.
Right.
Also, here's the other thing. 41 Cavs home games, that's just if they don't make the postseason. 36 Monsters home games, that's if they don't make the postseason. And soon to be 22 home games in the WNBA, and that's if they don't make the postseason. That's 100 events.
Yeah, but what if we miss out on Disney on Ice, Nick? Better not miss out on Disney on Ice.
Listen, this is no... you have a young daughter. I have three daughters who used to go to Disney on Ice all the time. Disney on Ice is not going to fill a whatever gigantic dome stadium there's going to be. That is absolutely a 20,000 seat arena gig, not a 60,000 seat dome. So
there are only so many 20,000. There's so many concerts, so many stand ups, so many things you can do in a city, and so I do think this is a part of it. But the place is not going to go dark.
So that's just, and I know Brian was. I understand the. How people feel about the competition. Guys.
Why do you care as a fan, though? You know what I mean?
Well, and it's not...
I get why you care if you're Dan Gilbert, but why do we care?
It's not going to cause Dan Gilbert to move the Cavs, the Rockers, the Monsters, or to shut down the Rocket... to shut down Rocket Arena.
Like, am I missing a valid reason for why somebody should care if they have to go to the Rocket Arena or the new stadium in Brook Park?
Unless Brook Park is that much farther away. Which there are. I mean, there are going to be some places that, especially on the east side, that's going to be farther from. I understand that. But you're going to drive no matter what, whether that's a 45-minute drive or a 25-minute drive. That's unfortunately, if you don't live downtown or if you don't live in the absolute approximation of where the stadium is, there's always a drive.
There's always a drive.
Maybe because I live in the sticks and that's where my hillbilly ass is most comfortable with, that I'm just not as perturbed by...
You're just always driving anyway.
Always driving. Always be driving. That's what... A, B, D.
Yeah.
Glenn Gary, Glenn Ross, great movie. It didn't make sense because it's ABC and not ABD, but that's what the movie did.
It's just your life motto, ABD. Okay.
So
I have the same distance, by the way. I'm okay. I'm in the same part to Brook Park that I am downtown, so I don't care.
So you have a reason why the preseason predictions, which as of right now, are not boding well for the Cleveland Guardians, why they don't matter this year.
So it might just be a this year thing, and it might just be it might actually be something that carries into the next couple years of baseball. I'm not entirely sure yet. Time will tell. But, Nick, the idea behind this is that baseball's middle class has never been more evident. And as far as the American League is concerned, it's never been more obvious that if you are in this group the Guardians are currently in, you can definitely reach the postseason. And if you're in the postseason, you can do whatever you want. There are so few great baseball teams. And in the American League, I can argue there are no great baseball teams, to the point where not only in the AL Central, but everywhere in the American League, there's a logjam of these teams that are sitting somewhere between 79 to 90 wins projected out, and they're all just clamped together, where if you're in that little stretch, and I think there are 24 major league teams that are in this little stretch, you can basically live in baseball's middle class.
So I think that matters. Also, projections more often than not are wrong. Like FanGraphs had, I think, 78 wins for the Guardians, and that would put them in fourth place. Who did FanGraphs have winning the AL Central last year? The Minnesota Twins. Who do they have winning this year? The Minnesota Twins. So, and I'm calling out FanGraphs because the 78 wins absolutely annoyed the hell out of me.
And they had him at 84 wins, by the way, and they had no one in the American League higher than 87, which is what I'm talking about with this little logjam here, where it's just baseball's got a middle class. I'm not going to say it's a problem. I think this is what they've been trying to search for the longest time. You have three unquestionably awful baseball teams this year, okay? The Rockies stink, the Marlins stink, and the White Sox stink. Anyone outside of that, you can start to make a case and an argument that they can get there to the postseason. Now, there are other teams I would put in there and say the Angels, for instance, and the A's aren't going to get to the postseason. But there's about 23 teams in there that could make a legitimate argument for getting to baseball's postseason, which is incredibly high as far as the numbers concern.
And specific to what you say, like, I'd rather be in the AL right now than the NL, where it's... I mean, it's the Dodgers
the top five
and the
best
Mets.
Teams are all in the NL. Yeah,
yeah. It's the Dodgers and the Mets, and even a team like...
But the Dodgers are the only team, Nick. And listen, the Braves won 89 games last year, and they had the injury to Strider. They had the injury to Acuna. Like, they're going to be better this year, but the Dodgers are legitimately going to threaten to win 110 games this year. Yeah. Outside of that, nobody else is going to be some sort of powerhouse. Nobody else is going to be some sort of win factory.
Well, and I think for like the Guardians specifically, it's interesting. The Guardians aren't, at least from the rotation and the pitching side of things, they're not just banking on the bullpen being great again, because they did sign Paul Sewald. Like, if you just assumed, well, Walters and Sobrowski and all your young arms are going to take over for, I don't know, Eli Morgan, and you're just going to run it back, you wouldn't have signed Paul Sewald to the deal you did. If you thought you could recreate what you did in the rotation, you wouldn't have traded for Luis Ortiz. Like, this is not a rotation right now that's banking on Tristan McKenzie finding himself again.
Yeah.
Like, even Logan Allen. Like, Logan Allen, really good in spring training, is their fifth starter. So, like, the Ortiz move, Bieber, John Means, like, they have attacked what were some of the flaws. I could have used one more hitter for sure, even after you acquired Nolan Jones. But like, it's funny. I don't know for certain that the Guardians are going to be the team that wins this division. I don't know if they can even get to the ALCS, but would I be shocked if this team has any less than 84 wins this year? Yeah.
But the point is that for people looking at 79 or 81 or 83, whatever that projection is, you're not out of it the way that baseball right now is set up and the way this season is set up, where there's just so much. I've never seen such a bigger middle class in baseball.
I think the Royals should be so much more. The Royals felt like so much more of a one-off to me last year than the Guardians did.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. They got obviously some help with their starters in the back end of last year, and we'll see if that carries over.
I'd be very surprised if Seth Lugo was a Cy Young candidate again.
Yeah, I would too. But I am interested to see if Bobby Witt becomes the best player in baseball, not named Shohei Ohtani, this year.
Yeah, and Pasquantino being healthy, I think, is big for them. But it's funny. Like, I don't look at that offense as a murderer's row.
No,
it's a couple really nice hitters.
Legit, half of their production last year from a wins above replacement standpoint came from two players.
And here's the other thing. I kind of it wouldn't surprise me if the Guardians had at least five hitters with 20-plus home runs this year. And I think Santana for sure, as long as he isn't washed and you don't have to replace him midseason,
we got to monitor that.
That's a potential. I think Lane Thomas is almost a given for 20 home runs. Hosey, so we're already halfway there. I think between Kwan, Nolan Jones, John Kensie, Manzardo, and Naylor. Oh, and that's before, like, if Gabe Arias actually has found he might hit 220. Also might hit 25 home runs while playing really good defense. The power there, again, you don't have...
We need it.
Outside of Hosey, you don't have one guy with all the power. You might have four other guys, five other guys with that kind of power, and that does make up for not having a Judge or Stanton.
Well, and think about it. You know, in the past few years, over the previous 3 years, the Guardians have had the third fewest homers in all of baseball. And like, even within that, last year they took a step up and a step forward. I don't know that I can depend on J-Ram hitting close to 40 home runs again this year, but if you can get that type of power, that would help out in a big-time way because they need it. You mentioned the bullpen. I know people recognize how great this bullpen was last year. They were historically great. And so I do think there has to be some sort of comeback effect. And I think that's what Fangraphs and all these projections are trying to put into play, is that you had such a dominating... I mean, that is a once-every-decade type bullpen that the Guardians had last year from a stat measurement standpoint, that there's just a natural comeback that has to happen there.
I think that makes a lot of sense. The two things are... You're legitimately 10 deep in your bullpen, meaning there are 10 guys in your organization that have claim to being in your bullpen right now.
Yeah, I mean,
now.
It's no question it is the strength of the team, and it was a massive strength of the team last year.
But like Walters starting the season at AAA. Sobrowski, I don't know if he starts the season at AAA if he doesn't have the elbow thing in spring training. Those are two guys who are crucial. And that's before guys coming up. That's before... guys getting healthy. And here's the other thing. The Guardians, to me, when the Guardians attacked the rotation the way they did, last year, so this is where it comes out in the wash for me, because the offense really is the big I don't know.
Yeah, which is fair.
Like Nolan Jones, if that dude's who he was 2 years ago, and plays 110, 115 games, you've got three outfielders who can hit 20 home runs right there, no questions asked, even if John Kensey strikes out a million times. But specific to the rotation, the Guardians didn't rest on their laurels on that bullpen. I think this rotation is a lot closer to being a success. I know everyone wants to put it on Luis Ortiz. If all that happens is Bibee, Williams, and Allen are who they can be and who we thought they were going to be 2 years ago. Oh, yeah, and Ben Lively just has to become a nice four. And you're looking for a fifth starter by the time July rolls around? Well, yeah, that's going to be Bieber. That's going to be Means.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how last year, what a freak of nature, every single bit of injury they had in the rotation was.
It's been a couple years now with the starting pitching and just being zapped by injuries.
And so, Gavin Williams and Tanner, specifically Gavin Williams and Logan Allen, one looking healthy and at a 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and the other just looking effective, I think that goes a long way to offset, even if the bullpen has a marginal step back. Oh, yeah. By the way, you got Trevor Stepan back, too, at some point.
I think the important part is that I think a lot of people are going to freak out with some of these projections. And I think you said it right in that it doesn't mean that all of a sudden I think the Guardians are going to win 90 games. I just think there's a baseball middle class thing that's happening right now where if you are in that little stretch, couple wins here or there, you can definitely be competitive.
So specific to that, I don't think it's like insane to think. Because I think the Guardians are a bit of a boom or bust team. I think a fair amount of teams in the middle class of the AL specifically are boom or bust because there's so many different things impacted than, oh, we've got five truly elite teams in the NL. I think if that offense hits for power this year and you have some health and that rotation works out, even if that bullpen regresses, it wouldn't surprise me if the Guardians had the most wins in the AL this year. And I mean, like an above 90 win team. I think in Fangraphs there wasn't a single team above 90 wins. I actually think
not
the Guardians,
on the AL side. No.
I think the Guardians could actually surprise and win a hell of a lot more regular season games than people realize.
For sure they can. Now again, that you what you laid out there is a lot of things going right in their direction. I mean, it's getting an offense to really. Really be able to produce at a rate that even they didn't produce last year. And then it's making sure that the starting rotation is able to produce at a rate that right now it's so finicky and so hard to be able to do. I just say don't get down to the dumps at the 78-79 wins, though.
216-474-0092. So I do one of the things we're going to throw out is it seems like even years, very good for the Guardians. Last year in the ALCS, 2 years ago, you're one game away from the ALCS, if not for the offense going completely stagnant against the Yankees. The odd years, though, like 2023, 2021, not great, Bob. Do you think that this odd year will fall in line with that with the Guardians, or do you think it will buck the trend? Real quick here, David Medine has been waiting to talk about the Browns Stadium, what's labeled as a controversy in the phone thing here. Dave, welcome to the show, bud.
Thanks a lot. So the Browns are a disaster, a curse, and just there's no way that business model could survive anywhere else, except maybe in Cleveland. If I were Jimmy Haslam and I don't get that dome in Brook Park, what's my incentive to not take that team to Toronto? They're talking about making an international league and maybe Jacksonville to London, but what if he just did that?
But he's not going to. Maybe walk me through this point a little bit more, bud.
I think he can make a lot more money with a football team in Toronto than he can in Cleveland.
I think he's printing money in Cleveland. I don't think he's hurting for money here.
Okay. And then just another thought, too, with this Brown Stadium, presuming that they built it in Brook Park, make it convertible to baseball. Remember when the Indians had to have, or the Guardians had to have opening day in Wisconsin 1 year because of the snow? Imagine having that as a backup. Or the Guardians start the season up till like April 15th-ish. There, you'll draw bigger crowds. You'll be insured against the weather. And I think it would benefit the whole region. That's what I got.
Dave, we appreciate you.
We appreciate Dave?
Yes, we do.
A combo that was.
We have a difference of opinion here. I don't think the Guardians will ever put themselves in the position again to be the tenants of the Cleveland Browns. I am all for, and I hate this because I love that park. Like that, the Progressive Field to me will always have a very special place in my heart. If one day we could get a retractable roof for the Guardians, it would be in the absolute best interest of attendance for that to happen. And I don't think we talk about that enough. I think that'd go a long way to just securing your places more of a baseball town than you are right now. They're not going to do any of that stuff.
They're not going to do any of that stuff. Go to Toronto. Where did that come from?
What does the Canadian dollar look right now? Matt, can you Google that? Matt's our Canadian dollar guy.
If only we were friends with Canadians right now.
That's true. God, how can you hate Canadians? Mm.
He is on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And, of course, you know from Rose Rotation and all kinds of other great things. Hi, Chris. How are you? What's going on, man?
Christopher.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
How are you? How are you? Can you feel it? It's baseball eve, man. The excitement.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Let's go. Ready. We are ready.
How you feel about your Guardians?
I feel okay about them. Very tough division. I think it's probably, to be honest with you, I think it's the toughest one to pick. Because I think you could make an argument for four teams, and I don't think you can do that elsewhere. So it's going to be a challenge, revamping the right side of the infield on the fly. We know what Carlos Santana is, even though he's just about to turn 39. He's still a good baseball player. But you're getting rid of two guys who were, key components of a club. And second base is a huge question mark. And even after the Nolan Jones trade, right field's a big question mark. So and our rotation is a big question mark. So there's a lot going on here. I didn't expect us to win 90-plus games a year ago and win the division and make the ALCS. So I think hopefully we'll be pleasantly surprised again.
Chris, I thought the Nolan Jones trade was interesting. I saw your assessment of the trade on social media. I wonder this. You traded something that your organization doesn't produce a lot of for a middle infielder when you had a glut of middle infielders, and then you turn around and get them back by trading from your glut of middle infielders. And I wonder, what inspired them to do that at this time based on the fact that they gave up on him 2 years ago?
Because they don't – this is how the Guardians do things. They're not going to be paying top dollar for a guy who could be an outfield lottery ticket, right? If he turns into what he was in 2023, then that's a huge upgrade in right field. I think we all like Will Brennan a lot. I love him personally. John Kenzie Noel is an intriguing figure out there, but that is not a highly productive spot for us. And so the Guardians take a guy in Tyler Freeman, who I think it's wonderful to have guys that are utility players that you can plug them in at multiple positions and feel good about doing that. I don't know if we have a guy on the roster like that right now. Like Daniel Schneeman, he's shaky at several positions. You put him in the outfield, he doesn't look like an outfielder. You put him in the infield, he doesn't look like a great infielder. Like Freeman was solid. So in that standpoint, he did a really, really good job.
He was good in center too, wasn't he? Yeah, I thought Tyler did a nice job in center.
Yeah, I mean, his routes to the ball, it was like when the GPS gives you a new route, would you like to save 4 minutes? So it was a little bit all over the place. But the completion of the play is what matters.
Yeah.
And so he did that. And I thought for a guy who never played that position in Little League, travel ball, high school, or the minor league, and had to literally learn on the fly at the major league level was awesome. I thought it was great. But this is what we do. We take flyers on guys like Nolan Jones and hope that it turns into something. Hope that you get the production of a $15 million ball player for significantly less.
Chris, let's talk about your guy, Stephen Vogt, for a second. I'm curious, what do you think he learned in that first year, and how will he be a better manager in his sophomore season?
Yeah, hopefully he learned not to pitch to Stanton in the ALCS, so I'll take that.
Wow.
And I'll sign up for it right now if that's the situation we're facing. I think he probably just learned, my guess is, how to lead a little bit better and not worry about what other people think. I think that's probably the hardest part of the job, you know, because he's so close to having been a player. Mm-hmm. It was just a couple seasons ago where he was still in that batter's box. And players know when managers mean business. They also know when they're full of BS. They know when they're, you know, when they don't care in some cases. And that's not the case with Stephen Vogt. He cares. He's got a, I think he's got a really, really good connection with guys. And I thought for a first-year manager that he wasn't really searching for an identity. But I imagine it's probably just solidifying what he believes in, and that there were probably times where maybe he asked for a little too much help from guys. I'm guessing here. I don't know this for a fact. So I'm just throwing it out there. And that's a tendency that young guys have when they have such respect for other people on their staff. And while it is a collaborative effort, you're the last line of defense. Make your call. When he went out there last year, and we all remember it well, the Tanner Bibee game where he went out there, I think it was against the Twins, you know, that was his call. So eventually, and I hope we see more of that this year.
Chris Rose joining us. The one thing that I was fascinated, and Stephen, of course, a former catcher, at the way he used his bullpen last year, and maybe, Chris, how often he used the same guys in the bullpen. I mean, you had a lot of guys with big numbers and appearances. Was that okay? I know it works beautifully. Is that okay moving in this year?
Well, sure, it's okay as long as their arms don't fall off.
Well, now there's that, isn't there?
Right, and yeah. We talked about this recently on this show, was that, because he asked me how big a concern the starting rotation was. You know, the rotation, it's more than just, well, those guys get knocked around. When those guys get knocked around, that means other people have to pick up innings. And there's, you can't have a ton of innings on these guys' arms. And that's the key. I don't think it's so much the appearances, but the number of high-stress innings that guys end up throwing, because at some point that does catch up with you. It just does. And so I hope that, you know, I would love to see a little more length out of our rotation and not be so dependent. You know, everybody talks about it. Well, when you get to Cleveland's sixth inning, the game's over. That's awesome in October. You know, like, you can't be using that card in May and feeling good about it, because those guys will blow out eventually.
All right, let's talk football, my friend. Where do you think the Browns stand now with quarterback, and where do you think that, what do you think the quarterback room is going to look like when they go to open camp? I'll even give you open camp. So where do you think they're sitting, and what would you like to see them do?
I've told you this. I still think that Kirk Cousins is in play.
Okay.
You know, Atlanta, just, they don't have a lot of picks. I think they've got three in the first six rounds, something like that, I want to say. Is that possible?
Well, let me backtrack on Kirk Cousins there for a second. If the Browns, uh-huh, is it dependent on what the Browns do at two for Kirk Cousins? Because he is holding some cards on the no trade. If the Browns Abdul Carter at two, then yeah, I think that it's possible. But if they go Shedeur Sanders at two, I could easily say I've already seen this game before.
Right, and that's very possible. But I also don't think he wants to be there, period. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they're saying, they have come out and said, Michael Penix is our starter, which is different than, well, this rookie might have a chance to play at some point this year. He might not like it if he gets pulled eight games in. But, you know, he sees it. He's doing the math. How many places right now does he legitimately have a chance to start right now? How many?
Valid. Not many.
Not many. Mm-hmm. They already got two veterans up there in New York. Minnesota, maybe that happens, but I don't
know.
Pittsburgh.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of people that think that Aaron Rodgers on McAfee's show that he's doing in Pittsburgh, that he's going to walk out on stage and announce he's signed with the Steelers. Like, that would be perfect Aaron Rodgers if he did that.
And so not Mike Tomlin. So not Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, but, you know, that doesn't matter. So where else can he play? I mean, how many other places have openings? There are just not that many. But getting back to at two, you know, we need a quarterback on a friendly contract. We just do. So whether you do that at 33 and you're going to take a huge swing for a guy that, who knows, could be Will Levis in 2 years. He was taken with the first pick of the second round. Or could turn into a legit 10-year starter. Who knows? Listen, I've gotten it in my brain. This is the way I'm wrapping it up. Shador is not perfect. There are some issues, I think, that will become more compounded at this level. Right? He's not a great athlete. He doesn't have an amazing arm. But he does do some things exceptionally well. That particularly when you pair him with the right offense and, more importantly, the right play caller and coach, that you can do more than get by with him, that you could win a bunch of games with him. It kind of gets us back to where we were with Baker Mayfield. Different quarterbacks, I always felt like you could win games with him. Could you win a Super Bowl with him? That's another question. But we're back to the can we win enough games with a guy stage. And I didn't think we were going to be there, but that's where we are. And I do think we could win games with Shador Sanders.
The trouble with Cousins is, as you mentioned, if the Browns do something and he doesn't like it, you know, he can use his no trade clause. With that thought in mind, do the Browns need to bring in one of these remaining free agents, or could you go into the season with, or into the off season, I guess, in the, you know, like mandatory camps and everything else, with Kenny Pickett and whoever you draft and whatever else you put in that quarterback room?
Well, I mean, Kenny Pickett, we all have bad thoughts about him from this standpoint. Like, we saw him, what he did in Pittsburgh, and don't give me the whole, well, he's got a winning record thing. He was on a really good franchise, right? But I do think that Kenny Pickett is a viable backup quarterback. The Eagles thought that he was,
mm-hmm.
right? He was good enough to be the backup quarterback.
On a Super Bowl contender. Yeah.
On a Super Bowl winner.
Yep.
So, like, I'm fine with him being the number two. And then if we're really sitting here discussing the number three quarterback, let's focus on number one. Like, whoever number three is number three. There's a bunch of guys that rotate from team to team, and sometimes they get a shot at eventually growing into the second-string quarterback. Like, Tanner McKee, the guy that was the third-string quarterback for Philly, I think he's going to be their backup this year. I don't think it's DTR. I think he's their backup. But the fans in Philly aren't sitting there saying, well, who's the third quarterback? You know? Like, that's not where they are in their process. We shouldn't be there in that either.
All right, Chris, last question for me, because I'm a big gift giver. I like to give away, you know, the holidays are coming up, Passover and Easter. This is, you know, everyone exchanges gifts like that. And I'm looking online for a nice gift, and I'm looking at the Chris Rose Rotation t-shirts that are available. What is the number one seller on this JohnBoyMedia.com site? You have so many. I particularly like the Chris Rose Football Show, the head-to-head t-shirt. I'm just curious. You tell me, what is the number one seller of Chris Rose t-shirts right now?
Well, that's a wonderful question. I don't know, but it is shop.johnboymedia.com.
Yes.
And actually, the Chris Rose Rotation t-shirt is a collector's item now.
Oh, it
because,
is?
Because, yeah, the show yes. has been rebranded. It is called Dugout Discussions with Chris Rose.
Oh.
We're actually taking it to the field. So we're not doing Zoom interviews anymore. The interviews themselves are shorter, so they're like 10 to 12 minutes. Our first episode just dropped with Bobby Witt Jr. We've got Mike Trout coming out next week. We've got Tarek Skubal of the Tigers, the Cy Young Award winner, right after that. And so whenever teams come out to Dodger Stadium or Angel Stadium, I'm going to interview Star. But also we have these cute little segments where my wife is involved. It's called Questions with the Queen.
I have seen
it. You got to go check it out.
Yes.
Yeah. And they're fun little questions. Like, one of them that just happened was, what was your first job? And we got some amazing answers on guys' first jobs. And we just kind of splice them together. We talked to like seven or eight guys from every team. The Guardians are prominently featured in the first episode. Bieber's in it. McKenzie's in it. Kwan is in it. Stephen Vogt is in it. So there's a ton of guys. And they'll be appearing throughout the year as I ask them different questions. So it's kind of fun. It gets a lot of teams involved. And it's a quicker-paced show, so go give it a look on our JM Baseball YouTube page. or you can just follow us me at Chris Rose. I always retweet all our stuff.
Chris, I have 10 seconds. What was your first job in Northeast Ohio?
I was a ball boy for the Cleveland Browns.
That was your first job? Good for you.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was a hell of a first job.
Man.
I'd imagine.
Good job, Chris.
Yep.
We're proud of you.
Thanks.
Look how
Thanks.
Far you've come. Our little Chris has come so far. All right, Chris.
Hey, man. Our OC was a ball boy for the Browns. Tommy Reese.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When Dad was working for the team.
Look at
there
that.
There you go.
What a small world. Chris, all right, we're all over it. Thank you. We always appreciate your time.
Thanks, Chris.
Thanks, boys. Take care.
Peace.
You heard about this? Have you seen about this? Have you heard about this? Guardians will be back in action. The regular season starts tomorrow, 4 p.m. local time. First pitch, the game out in Kansas City as they start the season against the Royals. And to talk about all things, Tristan McKenzie going to the pen, the state of things, the state of the Guardians offseason, whether he agrees that the very sultry Guardians logo,
do you
right?
Like, what'd you
with
call it?
The robe.
You call it like the sexy Guardian?
The sexy Guardian with a robe kind of like slinked down over their biceps.
Easy now.
That's better than the real Guardians, the baseball one with the weird gladiator helmet on it. He's going to agree on this one. It's Zach Meisel of The Athletic on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Zach, can I get you in the camp of the sexy Guardian logo as opposed to the current abomination?
I haven't seen this, but if you say it's sexy, I trust your judgment here.
All right. Well, people
you know
it's
sexy.
people have been saying that for a while about me. All right, so I guess we'll start at the beginning here. Do you think the Guardians had a good offseason?
Oh, guys, this is. I know how your show works. You got to get to the 2020 here in 15 minutes, and you're going to start with that one. I don't know. It was a weird one. I think in the context of they just made the ALCS and the American League's wide open and you want to go seize it and go win that first World Series since 1948? No. Have they done some things to salvage it in the last few days? Yes. But this season's going to boil down, like many of them do, to youngish players emerging as legitimate dudes. And, you know, I'm of the camp that you should remove as much risk and doubt and that stuff as you can. And I feel like they didn't do a ton of that. There's still a ton of question marks, but I don't think it needs to necessarily be some doomsday thing. I think there are a lot of teams, this isn't to absolve them of anything, but there's a lot of teams who acted similarly. You know, the Mariners have the best pitching staff in baseball and decided they weren't going to add a bat to one of the lousiest offenses in baseball. The Orioles didn't do enough. Even the Yankees didn't do enough. So they're one of many teams who I think it was a disappointing winter. And I guess you just have to move past that and focus on what's ahead now.
Yeah, Zach, it's an interesting time, especially in the AL. You know, on the NL side, the Dodgers are so much far and away better than everyone else. But in the American League, there's so many teams that are stuck between that like 90 to 80 win territory that it almost feels like no one's pushing each other to even be better.
Yeah, it's we look at the Central Division, and for years it was like, okay, whoever emerges out of there is, you know, they beat up on their division opponents. And you're right, Jonathan, like it's the landscape is pretty even. You know, you've got like the big free spending titans in the National League. You get to the playoffs and you're going to have to get through the Dodgers and the Phillies and the Braves and the Mets and that doesn't sound fun. But in the American League, I mean, whoever wins the Central could win the American League. Like, it's not far-fetched to say that. And I think you look at the East, and it's going to be super competitive, but I don't know that there's a 95-win team there. You look at the West, it could be a three-team race. I think even the A's are a little bit better than they've been. But I don't know that any of those teams are 95-win teams. So you're right. Like, this is very even. And I think it when that happens, number one, you can't, like, you got to start going for the jugular from day one. Like, every win is going to be critical. And number two, it's going to depend on injuries. It's going to depend on young players taking steps forward. It's going to depend on, all right, this guy's not getting it done. Let's go get that top prospect from AAA and get him up here before it's too late. Like, little moves like that can decide quite a bit.
Zach, the Guardians offense subtracts Andrés Giménez and Josh Naylor, they add Carlos Santana, and the late addition here being Nolan Jones. inevitably, which players do you think this offense comes down to either being better, worse, or the same offense they were a year ago?
I think there's a group, let's say it's Kyle Manzardo, Bo Naylor, Brian Rocchio, Nolan Jones, and Jean-Kensy Noel. How many is that? Five? I think you need like significant steps forward from three of them. Is that fair? You know, you can dream up a decent lineup by the end of the year. Like, I don't think it's crazy to think that the lineup could be the strength of the team by the end of the season. But it's going to take some steps to get there. You know, you need Lane Thomas. I guess Lane Thomas could be in that group too if he can finally put together that the power potential and the speed. But you're going to need someone to emerge. If it's Jones, if it's Noel, if it's them just platooning all year and it's going well, like, you need a solution there, especially since Chase DeLauder's not going to be healthy for a little while. You're obviously going to need an answer at second base, but you need Brian Rocchio to be the guy you saw in October. You need Kyle Manzardo to be the hitter you thought he could be when you traded Aaron Civale for him. And a big one is Bo Naylor behind the plate. You know, he's going to play 5-6 days a week. Austin Hedges isn't going to give you much offensively as his backup, so you need something from that position. And if they can get a couple of those, you know, not everybody's going to have the dream performance that you get drunk on when you have that spring training optimism. But if a few of those guys can step forward, I think this lineup, you start to structure it, and all of a sudden, you know, right now you feel confident in, like, the top three or four, but there's a path to feeling good about, like, six or seven spots.
Zach, I saw you tweeted out before you joined us, like right before you joined us, about a fun interaction with J-Ram. He says he lost fat, increased muscle. He was so incredible last year.
By the way.
Yeah. Is that for you too?
Yeah.
He was so incredible last year. How is it that he continues to just kind of defeat Father Time? And I guess he's doing the right work here.
I think we are probably all better off not trying to figure out anything about this guy. Let him remain a mystery. Let him remain underrated, because nothing makes sense. I mean, he was always the smallest guy, even back in the Dominican Republic. You know, the scout who ultimately signed him for Cleveland was not there to scout him. It just so happened that the guy he wanted, Ramirez, was standing out to scouts just because he was always a good hitter. But he was tiny, and there were questions about whether he could be anything in the majors more than a utility guy. So he's just the instincts are elite. The innate tools he's got, it's just, you can't quantify it. And so, you know, who would have imagined way back when he was a teenager that he would turn into anything remotely close to this? Who would have imagined after we watched him struggle his first couple of years in the majors that he'd turn into this? And so who would imagine that he'd still be hitting 39 home runs in his age 31 season? Like, it's, I don't know. He just constantly makes everybody look foolish who wants to doubt him. So I'm certainly not going to sit here and say that, yeah, that age is going to catch up to him. This is going to be the year where he takes a big step back. He'll have to just do that for me to believe it.
Zach Meisel of The Athletic on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Tristan McKenzie commented the other day he's not happy with the move to the bullpen. How big of a deal do you think this is, and how much does it bear watching over the next couple weeks and months?
Yeah, he's an interesting case. You know, I keep going back to the Carlos Carrasco scenario from now 11 years ago, where he was on like his, I mean, he was the cat on its ninth life, and he had been in the organization, had pitched in like five different major league seasons, and it just was not clicking. Went to the bullpen, and they told him, pretend you're a reliever and you have 20 pitches to waste instead of 90, and just go attack from pitch one. And the light bulb went off. He came back later that year to the rotation, made 10 starts. His ERA was one, and the rest was history. He became one of the better pitchers we've seen in Cleveland over the last, I don't know, 50 years. I don't know that that's going to happen with McKenzie. I think the frustration for him is he just had two really frustrating years. He's pitched at a Cy Young caliber level before, so he knows what that ceiling is. But, you know, it's hard to chart your path back. And I think it it's a little bit humbling to go to the bullpen, knowing, especially, you know, it's not like he's going to be pitching in the eighth inning with a one-run lead right off the bat. Like, you've got to work your way up the ladder here. So, you know, he's still got good stuff. He's healthy. The fastball is showing more life than it maybe ever has for him. So I think this can work. I think he'll buy in, and he'll have to remind himself, like, teams need a lot more than five starters. Just because you couldn't beat out Logan Allen in spring training doesn't mean, you know, you're not going to be a part of this rotation at some point in the summer, but you have to go earn it. And so he's a smart kid. I think he understands the situation, and it's just a matter of throwing strikes and getting ahead and, like, pitching with confidence and being that guy he was a few years ago.
Zach, do you think we get the Bibee deal done if not for the existence of Tristan McKenzie and what he went through, and Shane Bieber and what he went through?
Yeah, I thought about that too. Maybe it plays a little bit of a role. You know, Bibee was disappointed that they didn't strike a deal a year ago. He was coming off that great rookie season, and he was ready to sign. But the Guardians' offer was pretty low, and they didn't make a ton of progress. So I think he's always understood the risk and the reward that you have to weigh. And it worked out in the end for him, because he had another season where he pitched well, became the ace, got the ball in the most critical moments in the postseason, and pretty much doubled the amount of money that he was going to make had he signed a year earlier. So it worked out. I think that's just, you know, it's the nature today too. It's, everybody has different appetite for the risks they want to take. We've seen Shane Bieber bet on himself, obviously. Tristan McKenzie was pretty close to signing a deal 2 years ago and then had injuries, and that didn't happen. So, you know, it depends on your personal preferences. But with Bibee, I think this kind of works out. Like, I know people say, like, oh, you shouldn't, you know, he could have gotten so much more money if he would have bet on himself. But, like, you never, Tommy John is a grim reaper, and he's always lurking with a scalpel, and you just never know when it's going to hit you. And if it hits you, like, in your contract year, that can completely change everything. So I think there are some guys who are always just going to try to jump at the first chance or second chance they can to get a deal that they deem fair.
Zach, I know Guardians fans want to hear the name Stephen Kwan in this next answer. It feels like that moment has passed, but there's still time before opening day tomorrow at 4 p.m. Are the Guardians done with extensions for this offseason?
I hate to answer that directly because it can only make me look like I know nothing if I answer a certain way and something changes. I've seen times when this gets done the morning of opening day. I've seen these linger into the season a little bit. I know most of the time players don't want that distraction. So I'll never say never. Is that a good cop-out? Does that work for you guys?
It is, but, like, what are there obvious names beyond Stephen Kwan?
I think the two would be Stephen Kwan and Lane Thomas. Sort of different cases here with Lane Thomas in a contract year. You know, that is more just if he's not willing to, like, bet on himself and would want to extend by a couple years here, just kick the can down the road a little bit. With Kwan, I mean, they've talked each year. You know, he's got more leverage now. He's making $4 million this season, not making the league minimum anymore. And he can be a free agent after three more seasons. So I think once you get to this point, you definitely have more leverage. That price is a lot more than it would have been a year or two ago. And that makes it tougher to strike a deal. But not impossible, just tougher.
All right, Zach, get us set up for opening day a little bit here. Do you think Kansas City, I've tried making the claim, I think by the end of the season, Bobby Witt Jr. is going to be the best player in baseball, not named Shohei Ohtani. I'm very high on him, but I'm not high on what the Royals really haven't done this offseason. What do you think about Kansas City, and especially with their starter and Reagan's going tomorrow?
Yeah, I think the division is impossible to predict. I think you can order the four teams, not named the White Sox, in 1 through 4, however you want, and you could make a case, and I would understand it. Cleveland could be first. They could be fourth. Kansas City could be first. They could be fourth. I think the Royals have a decent floor. Like, they've got, like, Bobby, I agree. Witt Jr. is probably, I haven't looked at the the betting markets, but I would think he's among the favorites to win the AL MVP. And their rotation's really good. The question is, do they have depth? You know, they had a lot go right for them last season, which is why they added, 30 wins to their win total and made the playoffs for the first time in 9 years. I have questions about the second half of their lineup. Like, every team in this division has questions. It could very well come down to just a game or two separating the teams at the top. So I kind of put these two teams together. I don't know. Like, what do you guys like? I don't. All these teams just seem like 85-win teams to me. Some days I think Cleveland can win 75. Some days I wake up and think they're going to win 93. I have no idea.
All right, Zach. I saw CBS Sports had a bold prediction for the Guardians that we have two outfielders that hit 20 or more home runs this year, which feels like a statistical anomaly if it ever happens again. It can be a singular player. It can be, you know, one spot of the team, the offense, the rotation, the bullpen. They can be team-wide. Give us a bold prediction to hang on to heading into tomorrow's first pitch.
Yeah, I think Gavin Williams will pitch like an ace. I try not to read too much into spring training performance, but it's the way he's dominated everybody. He was really unhappy with how last season went, and I think the dude is just built. Like, you look at him, and he's like, yeah, that dude will throw 190 innings. He'll strike out 215 guys. I think you're going to end the season with a two-headed monster atop the rotation, and you know, that puts them in a good spot. You get Bieber back in the middle of the year, and you know, if this team can get to October, I think it could be pretty interesting the way they're built.
Zach, great stuff as always, buddy. Excited that baseball's back. I'm sure you're not that excited about the grind, but we are excited to have you back and baseball back, and we appreciate you.
Nick Wilson, he knows sexy.
That's going in the open, fella. Don't think it's not going to.
Exactly.
Thanks so much. Zach Meisel there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. I am wearing my Merry Rizma shirt. All right.
And so, he could sense that. He knew that.
He heard it in the voice. Very Rizful today, in the words of my children. As a Christmas present, I'm never not wearing it again now because Nick Wilson knows sexy.
We just had Anthony Castrovince on talking about the Guardians. He was maybe a little more optimistic than I've seen some of the odds makers. We also got the breaking news moments ago that, fear not, your Guardians will be on TV this year. We had the whole rundown. You'll be able to go where again, Owen, can they get that? I know we'll put it on the website.
It is. Like, the big ones, if you just go to cleguardians.com and there's like a watch tab, but you'll see it. Like, every reporter in town has a link to that as well. But the, you know, UVerse, Cox, DirecTV, Fubo, Spectrum, those are all the big ones. They all have, they're all going to have it. Basically, everyone's going to have it. If you have one of the smaller providers, though, you go to cleguardians.com, click on watch, and they have an opportunity to put in your zip code, and it'll tell you exactly what channel it'll be on your provider.
All right, Jason Lloyd in for Ken Carmen today, coming up in just about 15 minutes. Some news from the state capitol on the stadium situation for the Browns. What does it mean for you, especially you gamblers? Stay tuned for that. 216-474-0092. It's opening day. We kicked off the show with opening day. And Jason, your level of excitement, because I know that in this town of all the media, we were talking about, you know, which sports are bigger when. Jason, you've always been baseball guy through and through. I hear all your conversations off the air. It's a lot of baseball stuff. So your level of excitement, given that so many Guardians fans are like, after that offseason, after the amazing playoffs that we had last year where we were dialed in, they're a little disappointed. Do you get excited again, though, on opening day?
Yeah, of course.
The spring eternal for you.
Yeah, I mean, the division's wide open. And, you know, I think Anthony's right. They could finish first. They could finish fourth. They could finish anywhere in between. But they got a chance to win this thing. And once you get to the playoffs in baseball, you know, you give yourself a chance. It's not like in the NFL, you know, when you get there as the one of the last seeds, you're probably going out in the first round. You're not beating Kansas City. That's not the case in baseball. Like, how many times have the wild card teams won it all? And so I think with this bullpen, it is going to keep them in games. And, you know, when the Guardians spend money, they have to spend it on Paul Sewald because $7 million isn't going to buy you. I mean, Alex Cobb got $15 million this offseason. Alex Cobb pitched three games last year, got $15 million from the Tigers. You can't buy starting pitching or really an impact hitter for that type of money, but you can buy an impact high leverage arm for the bullpen for that. And so they're just going to keep loading up on bullpen arms, and you're not necessarily going to manage the game like you do in the postseason where two times through the order and you pull the starter. But the more top-end relievers that you have, the more you can shorten the games to five, six innings and then start unleashing some of these guys. But yeah, I do think you want to guard against wearing these guys out.
Did they overwork them last year?
Probably a little bit. I think it was more in the postseason, the overwork of the postseason than the regular season. They were gassed by the end. But, you know, you were managing to win, and which is what you have to do, obviously, in October. And so, yeah, you had a short leash on some of the starters, on most of the starters, and you tried to get to your bullpen as fast as possible because that was the strength of the team. And if they make it there again, they'll probably do the same thing and hope that, you know, a Paul Sewald can add to what they already have with those just huge arms at the back end of the bullpen and give them one more option. But I absolutely think the Guardians can win this division. I really like the Royals. I think the Royals are really good. I don't like the Twins as much. I don't think Detroit's going to hit enough. Detroit's rotation could actually be the best in the division by the end of the year.
They're good.
But I don't know that they're going to score enough runs. I like the Guardians'
chances. So why is it that it seems like they're just not getting that respect? They just don't seem, everywhere I look, the Guardians are not the team that people have winning this division, despite their pedigree, despite the fact that Vogt's already proven that he could do it. So it's not like one of those, well, we have this mysterious new manager who doesn't have experience. Yeah. He just did it. I mean, he just did it a year ago.
Well, they already struggled to score runs, and they traded a middle-of-the-order bat in Naylor. And, like, again, like the Guardians have to think very business-like and strategically in how they do this. So they draft Pisana, so they move off the Jimenez contract because you can't pay, at least Cleveland can't. Cleveland, under this ownership, can't pay a second baseman $22 million to put up the offense that Jimmy was putting up. So, okay, you understand that. They were not going to re-sign Naylor, so you can trade Naylor, get something for him, and sign a replacement-level player of similarity in Carlos Santana, and get the similar type of production, a little bit better defense out of than you would have gotten out of Naylor. A little bit less offense, though. And there's huge risk in that because of how old he is, and he could go off the cliff at any time. So the Nolan thing really, I think, sort of bailed out the offseason entirely, because I could see why fans were disgruntled with the lack of anything, really, other than the Bibee extension. But to swoop in and get the Nolan thing done, that could be a huge move for them.
I got pumped about it. Yeah, I gotta be honest. I know it's kind of silly because, you know, there's been a mixed bag with Nolan Jones. I love the cannon. I love his arm. You know, I think that's a fun thing too. I think he can be a really fun player for this team and for fans to rally around, especially considering that there were fans that liked him, you know, earlier. And now we have a chance to someone who's a little more experienced. Granted, the injuries are something that, you know, messed with his career. So I think it can be a lot of fun. I mean, Naylor was a fan favorite. There's no doubt. I mean, Ken called him the most interesting man in baseball and said he was his favorite player, and he's gone. So I do get how some fans are annoyed, but I think once they get started, and if they can jump out to a good start too, right? I mean, Tito's teams, you know, failed to do that so often, but you had trust in Tito.
Because they were playing their best.
40-20 last year, though, and it made it. Helped you overlook that you had a rookie manager who was the same age as your other catcher. I do think there's a lot of it. Jason, you're a local guy that grew up. They were your number one team, right?
Like, yeah.
As a kid?
Oh, as a kid, I lived and mostly died with the Indians in the 80s and the early 90s.
But it's one of those things where it's like March and April. Are you really, I should say March, are you really into the team at all? When they're out in Arizona or when they were in Florida, how much were you really paying attention to them?
Oh, as a kid, I was.
Yeah, I just.
But not.
Now it's like, okay, it's here. It's kind of a reintroduction to the team. The good thing is there's not a ton of changeover in the roster. There's not new people to learn. Right. I get, that's the blessing in disguise, I guess. But
I mean, the reality here is right now it's NFL draft season, and the Cavs are about to embark on what should be a long playoff run. So no one's going to pay attention, unless you're a true baseball nut. You're not going to pay attention to the Guardians until June.
Well, and unless they're really good or really bad.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If they're just a average team that is floating around, you know, the top of the division, they'll be okay to make it to June, and then you really have to turn it on there. But
I mean, maybe if the Cavs get bounced early, you know, maybe attention turns to them a little bit earlier. But, you know, I'm expecting the Cavs to play at least to the end of May. So and so the Guardians aren't going to get a lot of oxygen probably, unfortunately, until then. But because I, you know,
I think they're used to that, though. I don't think that's necessarily a killer for them. They play in front of a lot of empty crowds in April, May, and
doesn't mean they like it.
Yeah, no,
they might be used to it. Doesn't mean they like it.
If anything, I think they use it as a motivator. I mean, I really think they're kind of used to that reality. And you're right, 40-20 last year, and the attendance did get the uptick. You know, it certainly did.
Yeah.
I just had one other question, because we were talking about the cable deal and Anthony Castrovince was going into that, the finances of baseball. How is this league going to deal with so many teams, Guardians being chief among them, that are just going to lose $30 to $40 million a year in revenue because of the local TV deals?
That's a much more complicated conversation, and I think a lot of teams in baseball hide behind the TV money when baseball, through collective bargaining, through the CBT tax, not collective bargaining, through the tax that the higher teams pay, that the Dodgers and them pay, they get a lot of money from the league that covers quite a bit of their payroll. So I absolutely think a lot of the teams at the bottom could be spending more than what they do, and I think that they use the TV contract as a shield at times. Yeah, I mean, it will be an impact, sure. But again, I think they'll figure this out in the long run. But baseball, there's I wrote about it a year or so ago. There's multiple revenue streams from Major League Baseball to the small market teams, to the Pirates, to the Guardians. And baseball is very secretive with those numbers. And it's basically the commissioner decides who gets how much. But I've talked to enough people that have seen the books and understand this stuff to know that they get a lot of money. Cleveland gets a lot of money from the league office.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it's crazy to think about. Like Jeff Passan the other day was talking about a floor that, you know, he's accusing all these owners of not doing what they should be doing with their payroll. And because it's such a crapshoot come playoff time and they've expanded the playoffs, like these owners are like, why would I dump $50 more million in payroll when once we get into the playoffs, it's a crapshoot either way. I mean, the Guardians have made the playoffs a number of years. They've got a savvy, you know, really, really good front office. So why bother? Why spend $50 million more? Part of the thing is, though, they lose a lot of interest with fans in the offseason. I mean, baseball is an afterthought in 27 of the markets. They just don't get talked about. And that's really not going to change.
It's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. It's opening day, everybody. It's opening day. Andy's in mid-story.
Oh, so anyway, we're talking about Kansas City, and the one thing I was thinking about is the freeway that runs on the outside, which I think is 70. And so we were leaving. It was the rookie trip, and I was corrected already. He wasn't dressed as Supergirl. He was dressed as a USC cheerleader. It was Kyle Denny, the pitcher. And I remember leaving. So the media always left. We were on the first bus to get back to the airport. So we were on bus one, and then some of the players who got on later, they were on bus two. And I remember hearing on bus one, they were like, hey, somebody just got shot on bus two. And I was like, what? And we turned around, and what happened was there was like some random bullet that was, I have no idea what happened, but it pierced the bottom of the bus and went into Kyle Denny's leg. And the go-go boots that he was wearing, because he was dressed like a USC cheerleader, because it was like rookie hazing day, and so that they always had to get on the plane, they were always dressed in like Halloween costumes. Right. It was always funny. So, but the good thing is that because he was wearing that plastic boot, it sucked up all the energy from the bullet that had already come through the bottom of the tour bus, and it went into his leg. and they were able to kind of, the trainer was awesome at the time. He said he walked right over to it. He saw that there was a little bullet in his leg, and he just kind of boop, popped it right back out and got the bullet out of his leg. I don't know why, but every time I see that wide shot of Kansas City, whether it's a Chiefs game or it's a Royals game, I always think of the freeway by there, and I'll never forget Kyle Denny in that day. There you go. There's my story.
There it is.
I kind of cleaned it up. I could have told a little different, but that's all right.
Ball players in USC cheerleader outfits getting shot. That's a good story, actually. We're going over opening day lineups. It's opening day. We're in the baseball spirit. We're in the baseball spirit. I picked some key years in franchise history. We go to 1995. Andy, why was that key?
Oh, are you kidding? Another World Series year.
There it was. Yeah. Actually, the first one since 1954. So it had been a while, correct?
Yes,
correct. And they didn't even win it in 54 or in 95. But the Indians opened at the ballpark in Arlington. It was April 27th, 1995, and remember, delayed because of the, you know, the player on player work situation, right?
Right.
So it was all delayed, and they played, what, 144 games that season. The lineup, folks, near and dear to your heart, this is the crew that almost did it all. Leading off, Kenny Lofton, Omar Vizquel hit second, Carlos Baerga, Albert Bell cleanup, Eddie Murray, the DH, Jim Thome was at third base, followed by Manny Ramirez. Think about that. Those guys hitting sixth and seventh. Manny went 4 for 5 that day. Paul Sorrento was at first base. Tony Pena was the catcher. On the mound, Dennis Martinez, followed by Dennis Cook and Eric Plunk. And they beat up the Texas Rangers in a sign of things to come. 11-6 in 1995, when the Indians won 100 games and lost 44. There you go. I'm optimistic like crazy that this team has a starting shortstop in Brian Rocchio. Last year, he had some offensive issues for a while. His defense was really good all year long. Brian can play defense. He found himself in the playoffs, as we know. And my guess is he's going to be more like the playoff hitter than he was like the hitter he was for most of the regular season.
I'm a huge fan of that, Brian Rocchio. Huge fan of his. How awesome was that? How much fun was that during the playoffs last year?
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, he was one of the better offensive players on the team in the postseason. Are you comfortable with him as your shortstop?
Yeah, I am right now. Why wouldn't I be? I mean, the bright lights were on at the end of the season last year. And, you know, he hit over 300 in the playoffs. He hit 333 in the playoffs last year, as a matter of fact. And, I mean,
When he came to the plate in the playoffs, he actually felt pretty good.
Because I remember during the regular season, I'm like, what's Rocchio going to do? And then, you know, you watch somebody and then you start to believe in them. And I think he believed in himself at the end there during the playoffs. So if you can give me postseason Brian Rocchio, I'm a fan. I'll be a fan for a long time.
I think if you get even close to postseason Brian Rocchio, you're going to be a fan for a long time. He's got a big-time glove. I am curious to see what happens without Andrés Giménez at second base. Because you put a guy like that next to any shortstop, and it's going to make the shortstop look good too, because that helps you. You know, turning double plays and everything else up the middle. Giménez is terrific. I think Gabe Arias is a pretty good defensive player as well. Now, he's not going to be Giménez at second base. Anybody who thinks that, I think go ahead and dismiss that notion, because Giménez is that good. But I think Arias can certainly play the position well, Andy. I don't see any issues there. Can he swing the bat as well as Giménez, which is why he's not here anymore, because he didn't swing it well enough to justify what was coming in that contract.
I don't know. I still feel second base is loose right now. We're not really going to know second base until a month into the season.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. It's why they play 162. You can have some mistakes along the way. Hopefully it's not a mistake. Hopefully they made the right decision. It gets cold really fast, though. When you leave Arizona and you start playing, I mean, even in Kansas City, I don't know, the weather's supposed to be pretty good in Kansas City today.
You'd mentioned that earlier.
Well, earlier this week I saw that. I'm just not sure what it's supposed to be today. The weekend looked pretty good there. Maybe rain on Saturday, I saw in the original forecast.
They'll figure it out, won't they?
Or I can figure it out for you in about 5 seconds.
Oh, good.
71 today.
Good.
High of 81, though. Winds 9 miles an hour, humidity at 41%. Mostly sunny right now.
Mostly sunny?
Mostly sunny.
In Kansas City?
In Kansas City, Mo. Not Kansas City, Kansas. Kansas City, Mo.
Kansas City, Mo.
Rain over the weekend, though. So they're off. They play today, 81. Off tomorrow, 75. And then Saturday and Sunday. Saturday is still supposed to be almost 80. And then Sunday, 52.
Oh, that's warm. How comfortable are you with Bo Naylor at catcher? I don't think this team needed to go out and add a catcher in the offseason. No. I don't. I think Bo more than deserves another year. I mean, they invested a first-round pick in the guy. And he did show some pop last year, which I appreciate. And he's shown a little pop since he's been in the majors. I just think now's the time to show that you can hit consistently. You tell me. 240? I mean, I'm not even setting the bar very high. If you can hit 240 and be pretty decent behind the plate.
You're asking him to raise his average almost 30 points, though, doing this. So.
Well, I know that. 40 points from last year.
Well, he hit 211. What are you asking for?
He hit 201 last year.
Oh, I'm saying career-wise, he's a 211.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spring training, he was under 200. But, I mean, he had 51 at-bats, so.
I think he can be a better hitter than what he's been. I don't think that this is a guy who is stuck at that level. That said, until you show that you're not stuck at that level, you're stuck at that level. You know?
Yeah.
So I do understand some of the concern people have. I'm really willing, in my mind, give him 400 at bats this year, and Austin Hedges will play when Bo Naylor needs a day off. And though I like Austin Hedges defensively, you know, Austin can hit the ball out of the park once in a while, but Austin doesn't hit real well at this point in his career. And so I don't want to see anything that resembles a platoon. I want to see Bo Naylor as the starting catcher and getting a lot of games.
Yeah, I'm looking back at some of his minor league numbers, and I think you're right, Jeff. Like, I think 230, 240 should be, if he can hit
somewhere
around there.
And that's not any great shakes.
No, but I mean, traditionally, what his best season was, he was 18. He hit 274, but he was rookie league, and it was only 33 games. So he did hit 263 when he was splitting time between Lake County and Akron.
Oh,
and Columbus.
That's
and,
swell.
I'm sorry, between Columbus and Akron. When he was 22, but he's got a couple years under his belt. I think this is an important year for him. Let's just put it that way.
I think he showed last year and even the year before, he's got some pop. It's a matter of contact for him. You know, if he can make better contact, then I think you're going to have something. Strikeout's a little bit of an issue, but again, at that position on this team, you have to be good defensively. I don't think he's as good as Austin Hedges defensively. I think he needs to continue to improve behind the plate. But if he can do that, and he can pick up that batting average a little bit, Andy, I think you ought to be okay. 123 games played last year. If he can get to 130 this year, you know, certainly stay in that range if nothing else.
Yeah, it's how he looks at the season, how they approach it. What's the game plan with him? I think, you know, fans are rooting for him. There's no question about it.
Well, of course.
I think he's a
seems really, like a nice kid.
Yeah, he's a well-liked player, especially when you're sitting outside the field. And I think people want him to have success. So,
and it's different for him this year. And I wonder,
without his brother, right?
Yeah, I wonder if it's a good or a bad thing.
We're about to find out pretty quick. Yeah. I just feel like that I've read, that I think he thinks this is his time now.
And he understands,
he knows it.
Without his brother being here, everything I've heard about what happened there and everything else, the thought between the Naylor brothers has been, hey, this is the business of baseball.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not like, you traded my brother. I don't think you're going to have that issue. And in fact, is this fair? Maybe without Josh here, as great as it was for the brothers to play together from a family standpoint and everything else, maybe it gives Bo the opportunity to grow and become more of a force in the locker room and everything else, because he's nobody's little brother anymore.
Yeah, I feel, you know? Yeah, I the stuff I've been hearing about, you know, coming out of spring training and stuff that you might have read. I think this is a big year for him, not only on the field, not only at the plate, but to step out and be a clubhouse guy, the guy that leads the clubhouse. And yeah, that's the guy you need to have. I mean, if your catcher
get
is
on
running
way,
the show,
anyway. Yeah.
Right? If your catcher's running the show, then you're in good shape.
I would agree with that. Chris is in Cleveland. Hi, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, fellas. Good to talk to you again.
And you.
Just a quick question. Do you guys think we'll see Travis Bazzano this year, and how do you think he'll do?
Chris, thanks.
I'll say I want to see him this year.
I know you want to see him. I'm not holding out hope that you're going to see him this year. I think to see him this year, a couple of things will have to happen. He'll have to be on fire in the minors. I mean, if he's hitting, you know, just an ordinary batting average, ordinary on base percentage, I don't think you're going to see him. He might get kicked up to AAA this year. I think that would be really good. If he could make it to AAA this year, 1 year out of college, he's probably starting in AA Akron, right?
Yeah, I mean, but he's got 3 years of college. I mean, it's not like...
I know, Andy, but a lot of guys do. Though I would love to see him be one of those guys who can step in 1 year out of college and go for it, you've got a lot on the line here. And you have Gabe Arias and Juan Brito and Daniel Schneeman and Angel Martinez who can hold down second base. In this case, err on the side of not letting him get too overmatched. But if he's doing okay, Chris, I'd love to see him up here. I'd love to see him up here. I'm just going to be really patient on that. And Andy's rolling his eyes.
I'm just saying he's still well, let's go back and look at the history of the Guardians Indians and their number one overall picks. Okay? Okay, now that's over. Here he is. We finally get to see this opportunity. I think it's going to be interesting.
It's Baskin and Phelps on the Fan.